This is PCJ Radio International.
Mr. Bond, there is no leaving us now. You tied to the chair with those headphones will make you listen to this program, and you will die a horrible death.
Yes, but I see you've put my favorite program on, Media Network Plus, so ha 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 to you.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perrell.
Well, hello, friends and listeners, and welcome to another edition of the program. Coming up today, we're going to be talking about drones in journalism. Many people, of course, are familiar with the drone strikes that are conducted by the U.S. military against insurgents in parts of the world. But this is using drones for journalism. But first, we move to Zimbabwe. Now, Zimbabwe does not issue broadcast license to commercial broadcasters other than the ZBC, or the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation. So, how does somebody who wants to set up a commercial station or a privately owned station reach viewers or listeners in Zimbabwe?
South African President Jacob Zuma has silenced Lindiwe Zulu, his foreign relations advisor and point person to Zimbabwe. A Newswire reported Friday that according to Mrs.
Well, that's Zimbabwe's first independent television station, First TV, Your Nation, Your Station. It was launched on Friday, the 19th of July at 6 p.m. local time. It targets viewers in Zimbabwe via satellite. Now, some of you are thinking right now, what, did they just apply for a broadcast license to the Zimbabwe government? No, that didn't happen, because the only licensed broadcaster in the country is the ZBC, that's the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation. The station is based in South Africa. One of the people that helps set the station up is David Smith, who now joins us on the line from South Africa. David, let me ask you, you didn't apply for a license, so how did you do it?
Yeah, interesting phrase of your question. Obviously, you know a reasonable amount about the broadcast landscape there. No, we did not get a license, a broadcast license for Zimbabwe, because quite simply, we would not be given one. There is no broadcaster, no TV broadcaster in Zimbabwe other than the state broadcaster, the ZBC. And the ZBC is probably the best example I can think of a state broadcaster being his master's voice, because the ZBC is truly the voice of the ruling party, ZANU-PF, or more correctly, the president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. Now, we're broadcasting on satellite from South Africa to literally millions of homes in Zimbabwe who have using free-to-air satellite receivers. And you may ask, Zimbabwe, not one of the wealthiest countries in the world, how come so many people have satellite receivers there? And the answer is very simple. People hate the ZBC to such a large extent that they take, in many cases, what little money they have and go out and buy these free-to-air satellite receivers just so they can watch anything that isn't the ZBC. And up until July 1st of this year, most people bought these free-to-air receivers, which just happened to be made in China and are commonly known as WizTech, the brand name of most of the free-to-air receivers. Up until July 1st, most people bought them so they could watch the public broadcaster of South Africa, the SABC. Mm-hmm. Because until July 1st, the three main channels of the SABC, SABC 1, 2, and 3, were freely available on these WizTech receivers. On July 1st, that signal was scrambled, not for political reasons, but for commercial reasons. Another free-to-air broadcaster based in South Africa called ETV took the SABC and its signal distributor, Sentech, to court because it claimed that SABC was stealing business from its subscription service. And so the SABC was ordered, when ETV won the case, to scramble their signal. And that left a space for a new player. And because most Zimbabweans already had access to free-to-air satellite TV, we took advantage of this gap and created in Johannesburg a TV service that, although it's based in South Africa, is all Zimbabwe content for the most part, with Zimbabwe news, Zimbabwe current affairs, Zimbabwean presenters, footage, film, music coming from Zimbabwe, sent to us mainly through broadband connections, FTP sites. And we've been on the air since July 19th. And that date is not arbitrary. It was set up to cover the presidential elections that were held in Zimbabwe on July 31st, to give a chance to parties that weren't necessarily the ruling party to state their case. Because on the state broadcaster, only the ruling party is given airtime to campaign.
Well, let me ask you a question, David. When you were setting the station up, was there any concern at all? Because we've seen this happen in other parts of the world, where you have a satellite broadcaster targeting a specific country. That country then acquires satellite jamming equipment and then jams the signal. Was this something that was in the back of your mind when you were setting this venture up?
Hey, there's always a risk. I mean, the day we went on air in the government-controlled main newspaper in the capital city, Harare, the Herald, there was a piece about our station called First TV, in which the ruling party and Mugabe himself said he would cripple First TV. When somebody like Mugabe says he's going to cripple you, you've got to take that a bit seriously, because he's known for not the most peaceful tendencies in dealing with the opposition. And I should also point out that it's not an opposition television station. It's a television station to serve Zimbabweans, whether they support ZANU-PF and Mugabe or anybody else. And the purpose of this outfit is to give Zimbabweans of all political stripes and opinions a place to get together and talk about how to get out of the crisis and build a country. So, yes, to come back to your original question, Keith, you know, I mean, of course there's concern. We know that Mr. Mugabe has close links with the Chinese government, and the Chinese have put a fair amount of money into Zimbabwe, notably in things related to the ruling party. So there is a concern, but you know, if we just sit back and say these things might happen, well, no change is ever going to come to that country. You know, there have been a lot of courageous broadcasters all over the world since radio and later on TV started, who've used the power of electronic media to counter propaganda from very undemocratic regimes, and that's what we're trying to do. Yeah, now, is there a danger? Is there a risk? Of course there is, but so far so good.
Recently, I think it was last year, there were some reports in various news websites and also publications saying that the Zimbabwean government had authorities going around collecting up shortwave radios. Have satellite receivers ever been targeted? I mean, have authorities gone to people's homes saying, oh, you have a satellite dish, we're taking it away?
That's probably the risk we felt was more likely to turn into reality than the jamming of the signal. Because, you know, it's harder to hide a satellite dish than it is to hide a shortwave radio. You know, if you walk by any house, any apartment block in any Zimbabwean town or even in rural areas, because all of the people with free-to-air satellite dishes are trying to receive the same satellite bouquet, all their dishes are placed in the same direction, so you know where to look for them. It hasn't happened yet, and I think it probably hasn't happened yet because it would make so many people so angry. Satellite dishes, the dish, the receiver, the installation costs roughly the equivalent of just under $100. You know, and for a rural Zimbabwean, or even somebody who lives in a township in a big Zimbabwean city, who may have an income as a street hawker or something not very lucrative like that, that's a lot of money. And to remove that equipment is not going to be very popular. And I should add that, You know, we did a feasibility study before setting up this station to see just how widespread free-to-air satellite receivers are in Zimbabwe. And one area where you find an incredibly large proliferation of these dishes is at police compounds throughout the country. If you were to take them away from the police, well, if you're a ruling party and you rule by force, you want to make sure that the police and other security forces remain on side. I can even point out that at ZANU-PF headquarters in Harare, the ruling party headquarters, there were a lot of these WizTech dishes mounted on the various floors of the large office building that is ZANU-PF headquarters. So, no, it hasn't happened yet. It could, but I think it might be a step too far for the ruling party to walk down that road.
So let me ask you, I mean, if I was able to receive this channel here and turn it on, you said that it mainly targets Zimbabwe. It is targeting a Zimbabwean audience, but would it be... I mean, do you also carry, say, content from other broadcasters on the channel as well?
Yes, no, we do. Because, you know, if we were to have programming that only talked about, you know, the build-up to elections, election day, election results, and alleged rigging of those elections, well, it would be hard, very difficult to keep an audience interested in that sort of thing, hour after hour, day after day, week after week. So what we've tried to do is, in some cases, pick up some of the programming that people used to watch on the SABC before the SABC signal was scrambled. We've purchased the rights for a very popular SABC soap opera called Zone 14, which we run on a daily basis on First TV. We've picked up some of the rights to some of the best locally produced feature films from Southern Africa. We've got a large selection of documentaries, especially documentaries dealing with Zimbabwe and Southern Africa that never would have been shown on the ZBC, because the ZBC doesn't show anything that might be even remotely critical of the ruling party. It's a new station. Hey, it's less than a month old. So we're building up our archive of material. The anchor of the programming, I should say, is our current affairs programs. We have an hour long current affairs program where we get some of the main political and academic leaders of Zimbabwe or Southern Africa to talk about the issues of the day. We have open line programs where Zimbabweans are invited to call and just get things off their chest. And they don't really have another way to do that, another output for their frustrations. These are the sort of things that a lot of people do on radio. Mm-hmm. But that sort of option of, you know, getting things off your chest on radio does not exist in Zimbabwe. Right. So to some extent, First TV also performs the services that a radio would perform as well. And one other thing on that item, the radio on TV, because, as I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, the ZBC, the state broadcaster, is so unpopular. A lot of people use their free-to-air receivers not just to watch TV, but to listen to radio. Well, I told you a moment ago that the SABC TV channel signals were scrambled. The SABC radio service channels were not scrambled. And so many people listen to South African radio on their televisions. So when we mix television concepts with radio concepts on First TV, we're not really alienating any listener or viewer. They're already accustomed to that sort of thing.
Now a moment ago, David, you said that, you know, Mugabe came out and spoke against First TV. There must be part of you thinking, well, that, you know, it's a good thing he did that, because if he's saying something bad about us and it's in the press, people are going to go wonder, well, why? What's wrong with this station? And end up watching you, right?
Well, sure. I mean, yes, the interesting thing is we don't really need to market it. We don't have to spend 1 cent on advertising to publicize the station, because in Zimbabwe, word spreads like wildfire about this sort of thing. Zimbabweans are extremely active on social media. So First TV, even before we went on air, set up a Facebook page, set up a Twitter account, set up a WhatsApp account, so that word would spread like wildfire on how to pick it up. And it's not as if we're dealing with much competition. There's only one other TV station in the country, and that's the ZBC, which many Zimbabweans refer to as the dead BC. So, you know, much as it's interesting to hear how Mr. Mugabe's criticism of the station might make us more attractive, we don't really need him to say anything at all. There is no competition out there. The bar was set very low by their state broadcaster.
David, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you, Keith.
And I was speaking there with David Smith from his home in South Africa. If you want more information about First TV and catch them online and their content, you can visit their website, which is www.1st-tv.com. That's www.1st-tv.com. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Many of you listening right now are familiar with drones. There isn't a day that goes by that drones aren't in the news. They're used heavily by the U.S. military to target insurgents in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and other places. But drones also have another purpose. Over the last maybe year or two, journalists have started using them. Richard Aidy has more.
Here in Pakistan's tribal belt, drone strikes have become a daily occurrence.
Former White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs admits that he was told he could never even acknowledge that this program existed.
The same progress that gives us the technology to strike half a world away also demands the discipline to constrain that power or risk abusing it.
We were in our houses when the attack took place. We didn't see anything coming.
Innocent people, especially children and women, are dying in these attacks.
Remember that the terrorists we are after target civilians, and the death toll from their acts of terrorism against Muslims dwarfs any estimate of civilian casualties from drone strikes.
Drones have been much in the news. Drones, I'll just remind you, are unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, although that's just one of the many acronyms they go by. Essentially, they're aircraft that fly without people sitting in them, and the world's biggest user is the US military.
South African police on Friday seized a remote-controlled camera drone flying around the hospital in Pretoria where Mandela's being treated. Freelance filmmaker F.C. Haman was questioned for 4 hours but later released, although the drone camera was confiscated.
That's why. Because drones are increasingly being used to do journalism. The ABC's Mark Corcoran is finishing a thesis on this very topic, and he's one of the co-authors of a paper on the issues around drones and journalism for the Reuters Institute of Journalism. So, when did all this get going?
There was never really a beginning. It's been very incremental, and that's for a number of reasons. The technology has only just become, if you like, accessible, user-friendly, cheap, far more capable. So we're just starting to see that happen probably over the last 2 or 3 years. And we're talking about, of course, the small drones, as the media calls them, or unmanned aerial vehicles, as the industry. This is another.
You've written about this. It's a contested term, isn't it? They don't like you to say drone.
They don't. I think drone, there are loaded connotations, and that's due to the military application, a highly controversial military application by the Americans in Southwest Asia. Drones kill people. And for those advocating their civil use, that's not a big selling point. So the industry and regulators hate the drone term. The problem is that they come up with all these three-letter acronyms, which are precisely the same terms as the military use. So there's a problem. I think that's a battle they've lost.
Yes. Well, I think we can agree that we'll call them drones for the duration of this conversation. There have been some very compelling images emerge. The first thing I can think of, which is I think a year and a half ago or so, there was a protest in Poland and some drone footage was used there in which you could kind of see what the police were doing behind the lines, as it were.
Yes, it was extraordinary. I think it was just over 18 months ago. And yes, it was in Poland. Very simple concept. It was a small multi-rotor, which is like a four-rotor.
Like a little helicopter.
Precisely, with four, and the size of the bin lid from a wheelie bin,
yeah,
essentially. And big protest, urban protest in Poland, lines of riot police, tear gas flying around the centre of the city. And the operator simply put had a camera on board this drone, put it up over the police lines and over the demonstrations. And it was compelling, compelling. And compelling in its simplicity as well, but also able to convey visually what you can't see from the ground.
That's it.
And able to get down much lower than helicopters. It covers that area between ground level and a height of about 400 or 500 feet, which is usually about as low as a helicopter will go.
Yes. The other thing, of course, is it's although they make a noise, it's much more discreet than a helicopter, isn't it? Especially in that kind of environment where there's a lot of noise anyway.
Well, that's right. It became a YouTube overnight sensation.
I've watched it several times.
Yes. You can actually see a couple of times the police looking up and a couple of the officers obviously in between dodging rocks, wondering what this is, and then getting on with their business. And it was an extraordinary bird's eye view. However, I think that this technology has been adapted rapidly in the last 18 months. And there was another protest in Taksim Square
in Istanbul
just a few weeks ago, where again, this extraordinary panorama of a protest and the dynamic. And if you like the choreography of a street protest, it sort of shows that.
And on YouTube, it's actually been set to music. So choreography is exactly the right word, actually.
Except it was shot down.
That's it. The police this time worked out that this was going on and they took exception.
Absolutely, because I think the protest is also, apart from providing imagery to the media, and CNN were very quick to pick up that imagery, they wanted to document incidents of police brutality. Now, you don't have to be a terribly good shot to knock one of these devices out of the sky, and that's precisely what happened.
Mm.
But I think a couple of days later, another one took its place, and that also introduces another very, very interesting concept which I'm been looking at, and that's the concept of the disposable drone. This is consumer-based technology now. It's extraordinarily cheap. What you can put in the air for maybe $750 plus a $300 or $400 GoPro camera attached, so say $1,000.
Mm.
A decade ago, that kind of technology would have cost you $100,000. And there are already researchers looking at drone swarms.
Yes.
The concept of putting whole clouds of these devices up there. Well, how would the authorities respond to that?
All right. So we've talked about footage shot in Poland and more recently in Turkey. In neither case was it actually commissioned by what you'd call a major journalistic institution, a journalistic organisation. It was kind of offered to broadcasters afterwards. Where are the news gatherers on this?
It varies. In Australia, unless you are one of the, I think there's a current list published by the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, CASA. I think there are 44 approved operators in the country at the moment, none of which are media organisations.
Right.
So you have to have approval to do that. For a media organisation to do so without approval is illegal.
And it became a contentious issue after, I think, Liam Bartlett and 60 Minutes used a drone to go over
Christmas Island
a year or so back. It wasn't taken any further in the end.
No, I think the authorities backed off because it's such a grey area. The technology's moving so fast.
Mm.
And also they have a complete inability, not only to regulate, to control it, to police it, to enforce it. And CASA themselves have said, well, look, we can write rules on this, but it's kind of pointless. That's just bad law. The technology is now proliferating at such a rate, particularly we're talking the very small drones here, that weigh less than 2 kilograms, that it's almost impossible to control.
But that's not going to be an open slather, is it? Because at the moment you can fly a drone and you can fly what's almost a hobbyist aircraft.
Yes.
As long as you're careful about it, you're away from a built-up area, those sorts of things. As soon as you stick a camera on it, it's a different thing.
Well, not about sticking a camera on it. It's the intent. So, for instance, if my son and I go and buy down to the local hobby shop and buy a $350 Parrot AR drone, fly it around the park, it's got a camera on board, video streaming back to my smartphone, that's fine. But if my son and I decide that we're going to do this with the intention of covering, I don't know, a car crash and selling that footage to the nightly news, we're then breaking the law. So it's really intent, and that's where the real problem comes, I think, in the future for the regulators in controlling this. The hardcore news gathering still not quite an option yet because of the complications in getting approval to fly over inner city, high urban density locations. What's exciting about this field is that you talk to the aerospace industry, you talk to the regulators, you talk to the aviation industry, even the media players. And this is new for everybody. I wouldn't say people are making it up as they go along, but it's a whole new space. And it's no point hand-wringing over should we or shouldn't we have them in the civil space. They're here. That debate's over. It's too late to have that debate. Perhaps what we should be talking about is, will their use redefine what we consider privacy, a reasonable expectation of privacy? That's an issue.
That was the ABC's Mark Cochran speaking to Richard Ady about drone journalism. Well, what can we expect propagation-wise over the next 7 days? Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from August 17th to August 23rd, 2013. The 10.7-centimeter flux is 125 on August 17th, down 5 to 120 on August 18th, 115 on August 19th and 20th, 105 on August 21st, and 100 on August 22nd and 23rd. We'll see an A index of 12 on August 17th, August 18th down 2 to 10, August 19th and 20th an A index of 5, an A index of 10 on August 21st, August 22nd 15, and August 23rd down to 10. A KP index of 3 on August 17th and 18th, and then August 19th and 20th we'll see a KP index of 2, back up to 3 from August 21st to August 23rd. We see a lull in the number of sunspots this week, with sunspot 1800 passing out of view. 1814, 17, 18, and 19 are in view. 1817 and 1818 pose an increasing threat of M and X class solar flares. Solar wind from a giant widespread coronal hole on the sun's northeast region will have hit Earth on August 16, 2013. See more details at pcjmedia.com/RPROP. Back to you, Keith.
Thanks, Dan. I'm going to hold you to that, by the way. Anyway, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. If you wish to contact us, our email address is very, very simple. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can listen to this program again, as well as all past editions, by visiting our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. So on behalf of the whole team, this is Keith Perron wishing you well, saying so long, take care, we'll see you in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.